How wealthy are you? Now, I guess that depends upon how you define wealth. In today's podcast, I'm going to chat with demographer and social commentator Mark McCrindle about wealth distribution in Australia. We're going to talk about what's happened to the wealth gap between the rich and the average Australian, and we're also going to ask, are we better off financially than our parents were? There are a range of organisations that regularly bring out world wealth reports, and they show that wealth distribution is a pyramid. You know, at the top, at the peak of the pinnacle of the pyramid, the top 1% own half the world's net worth. Then, as you go down the pyramid, the top 10% of adults hold around 85% of the world's wealth, while at the bottom of the pyramid, that big bulk, the base, 90% of the population own the remaining 50% of the world's wealth. So it'll be interesting to hear how Mark explains wealth distribution in Australia, which is clearly a wealthy country, and what the challenging times we've experienced last year has done to wealth. And of course, I'm going to share my regular mindset message with you. So at the end of today's show, you're going to have a better understanding of where you sit on the wealth ladder and what you can do about this. Now, remember, we're moving into a new stage of the economic cycle and the beginning of a new property cycle where intergenerational wealth is going to be created. So thank you for listening to today's podcast, because I'm going to do my best to help you along your wealth journey.
Welcome to the Michael Yardney Podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment, and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropol, who specialize in helping you grow, protect, and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now, here's your host, Michael Yardney, Australia's authority in wealth creation through property, who has been voted one of Australia's top 50 most influential thought leaders.
The rich keep getting richer, or so we keep hearing. But is that true? And last year, the coronavirus seemed to affect certain demographics more than others. And how has that actually affected the wealth distribution in Australia? Well, that's one of the questions I want to ask leading demographer Mark McCrindle, as well as what's happening to the gap between the rich and the poor in Australia. Now, Mark is a sought-after demographer. He's a futurist. He's a social commentator. But he's got an international following. And I know his passion lies in tracking emerging trends and researching social trends and analysing customer segments. So welcome, Mark.
Thanks, Michael. Great to be with you.
Well, Mark, according to the Australian Bureau of Statistics, the average Australian household's annual income is $116,584. Now, I know some people listening to this are going to say, really? But interestingly, the national average household net wealth has tipped the $1 million mark for the first time as well. Now, I know some people are going to say, really? But so my question to you is, with this higher wealth and income level, are we really any better off? What is going on?
Well, yes, it's mixed. I mean, cost of living is rising, cost of property and housing and rentals are rising as well. So we expect income to rise just because costs of living are rising. And you know, they do raise eyebrows, those figures. And I think we should put it into some context. You know, when we talk about the average household income hitting the six-figure mark annually, keep in mind it's household, not individual. And so that's all of the members, all of the earning members of a household, which is normally two earners in most households. And if we look at disposable average household income, it actually comes in at about half that. So just over the $50,000 mark for a household. So it's not as though we're rolling in money. On average, you know, we're paying our bills. Two-thirds of Australian households are carrying debt. And keep in mind that a quarter of them have debt that is three times their household income. So, you know, there's still a fair bit of debt that we're carrying, even in these uncertain times. But you know, Australians have been moving forward with both income and wealth.
Well, their debt's often against their home. And so in many people's minds, that would be good debt. So the biggest asset most Australians have is their home and then their superannuation fund. And I know a lot of Australians who bought their home 20, 30, 40 years ago don't have any debt against that. But in Australia, there's a range of demographic generations. And I know that's your passion, demographics. And in my mind, demographics is going to be the changes in demographics. How many of us there are, how we want to live, where we want to live, are going to be the things that change the future, shape the future, more than the ups and downs of interest rates or the coming and going of government policies. So how is wealth distributed amongst the different generations, Mark?
Well, it's mainly held by the older Australians because most of that wealth that we have, that $1 million national average household net worth, you know, if we sort of sell off all the assets and pay off all the debt, we're left with about $1 million on average. 700,000 of that is in property. So it's largely the household home. It's the non-financial assets. That's two-thirds of our wealth. About one-third are financial assets. So that might be bank accounts and superannuation. That's just under the $400,000 mark. So that's how it plays out nationally. But most of that household wealth in terms of property is in the older generation, simply because the younger ones are finding it tricky to get a foothold in the property market. So while if we look at Generation Y, those in their 20s and 30s, while their income is almost the same as the baby boomers, those that we know well, that are in their 50s and 60s, you know, it's about $120,000. It's a bit under for the Gen Ys, about $112,000. In other words, the Gen Ys are pretty much at their age, they're income rich, but they're asset poor. Because if we then look at the average wealth of the different generations, the baby boomers are at about the $1.2 million mark, a bit above the national average, whereas the Generation Ys have accumulated about $350,000 in net wealth. It's mainly in savings and super, haven't yet got the home, and so haven't yet progressed or moved too far ahead.
So it makes sense that the longer you've been saving, investing, building wealth, or owning a home, the baby boomers are going to earn, have more, have bigger assets. But one of the arguments I keep hearing is from the younger generations, oh, you guys had it easy. It was easier for you. Property's too expensive now. I can't get in. Are we better? Are the younger generations better or worse off than their parents were?
Great question. And in so many ways, they're better off. Now, definitely, if we compare the average house price to income, it's moved, the ratio has blown out. So for the parents' generation, the average household was about 5 times average annual earnings. Today, it's closer to 9 times average annual earnings. So it is getting more expensive, even relative to growing incomes, to get that foothold in property. But at the same time, other expenses are lower. The cost of travel, the cost of transport, just the daily commodities of life, food, etc. And this generation, Generation Y, have invested in their early years in their education. They are far more likely, in fact, more than half of them go off to university these days and achieve a university degree, you know, way beyond what was true for their parents. So they're investing in their future earnings. And that's why, even though they're 20 or 30 years behind the baby boomers in terms of moving up the earnings chart, in terms of their career, they're not far off in terms of their current earnings. But yes, over time, I think they will start to catch up in terms of the wealth. At the moment, the baby boomers are a quarter of our population demographically. They own more than half of the national wealth economically. So their economic footprint is twice as large as their population footprint. For the Gen Ys, it's the reverse. They're about a quarter of the population owning an eighth of the wealth. So they've got a fair bit to catch up. They will catch up, probably won't end up like the baby boomers with double their share of demographics in terms of wealth, but will certainly improve on where they're at the moment.
Well, there are 2 points that come out of what I've just heard you say. One is that the Gen Ys and the younger generations are finding it a bit harder to get on the property ladder, but at the moment, interest rates are at historic lows. So affordability, the cost of owning your home, is the cheapest it's ever been. But the other interesting thing I heard you say was that they're better educated than the previous generations. I guess my grandparents' generation were more workers and it was rare for people to go to university. My generation is a baby boomer and a portion of us went to university. Now the younger generations, we're more educated. Maybe we're in a knowledge society and that's good for us. I think that means they're going to, over the time, have more income coming into their pockets over a longer period of time, Mark.
That's a great point, Michael. You know, they will live longer than any previous generation. They are younger later in that sense. They will work longer in life. And as you said, because they can, because of the types of careers they're in a knowledge economy. It's not the physical roles where, you know, the body might give out and they might have to retire at 60. Not anymore. They'll work a lot later, well into their 70s is our forecast. So their wealth accumulation years are spread broader as well. So they will move ahead, that's for sure. And you're right on you know, comparing the assets. Yes, it's, you know, more expensive to buy that home, but less expensive to service that loan with these record low interest rates. And that gives great opportunities. And of course, you know, they have the support of parents often going guarantors in loans. They have high earnings as they begin. So that can give greater leverage to get a loan from the bank and to move ahead in the property market. And they're starting day one on the job with superannuation, which is going to accumulate for their retirement. Their parents didn't have that. Their parents had begun work before superannuation came in. So there are a lot of benefits for the Gen Ys, even though we keep seeing rising house prices.
Well, another thing we keep reading is that the gap between the rich and the poor is widening. Is that true?
Well, one of the best measures of that is the Gini coefficient, which is a technical term, but it looks at the spread of income in a single number. And the Gini coefficient is highlighting that inequality is getting less. So the Gini coefficient is basically a number between 0 and 1. 1 means one person owns everything. 0 means we're all exactly equal. And it's been getting closer to 0 over the last decade. It's not at 0, it's 0.32 is the number. But all of that to say, there is less income inequality today than we had a decade ago. Now, you know, we've got a tax system that does its best to even the decks and redistribute, and we're seeing that. And it doesn't mean that earnings are equal. I mean, the top 20% of households take away 48% of all of the national annual earnings. The bottom 20% take away 4%. So, you know, the higher take more than the national share, the lower take less. But, you know, that lower quintile are largely on government support rather than earnings. And so we're not, you know, you wouldn't expect to see them with that same level of income. If we look at the difference, the ratio between the bottom 1 in 5 households by income and the top 1 in 5, there's a 12-fold difference. In other words, the highest, you get the whole nation, put us in 5 categories based on, or line us all up in terms of annual household income and lump us in 5 categories. The average in the top fifth has 12 times the average annual earnings of the household in the bottom 1/5. But if we move from income to wealth, and wealth essentially is income over a lifetime, so we would expect the gaps to further, and they do. So if we look at wealth, total accumulation, the top 20% own 63% of the national private wealth. The bottom 20% own 1% of the national wealth. So that's how it plays out. And again, if we do that same ratio form, the average in the top 1 in 5 net wealth Australians has 92 times the wealth of the average 1 in 5 in the bottom end. So that's how it plays out. Income is more equal than wealth. And overall, we're tending to a bit more equality. But of course, there are big gaps as in a nation like Australia, you'd expect.
I think one of the things we've got to remember in Australia is our poor are still richer than the rich in many other countries. So I think last year has really proven that we do live in the best country in the world, the best place in the world. But how did COVID affect wealth? Because it affected health differently. It affected different age groups, different demographics differently. It seems that the economic fallout, the recession we had, the job losses affected different demographics differently as well, Mark.
Well, that's right. In many ways, it added to the equality of Australia. You know, we saw the government step in with JobKeeper and JobSeeker, with top-ups to those on welfare, and with a flat earnings rate for those, regardless of what they were earning, on the JobKeeper. And so that meant that those that might have been earning a bit less got the same amount as those who might have been earning a bit more. And so, you know, that you know, government intervention did sort of even the playing decks a little bit more. It also caused Australians to save a lot. We were seeing Australians feel a bit uncertain and pay down debt, save up money. We had to spend less because we couldn't go to the shops, we couldn't buy those things, we couldn't travel. And so that did help Australians move forward. So it's pretty incredible after a recession, after a global pandemic, that many Australians, and indeed those that were struggling the most, have actually done well through this COVID challenge.
Yes, they stashed their cash expecting the worst, and fortunately it didn't happen. So they're spending more now. I think a lot of people feel, I deserve it. They can't spend it overseas. I was interested at the end of last year, I saw that new car sales, prestige new car sales, went up 12.4% over the year. Maybe we're rewarding ourselves, Mark.
It's pretty hard to buy a new car at the moment because they've all been pre-ordered. Pretty hard to buy a new boat. You know, there's been a big run on that, which does just show how much money we were spending on travels, on overseas holidays, because as soon as that came to a halt, people started to accumulate a bit more money. And so, you know, while it did help out some of those that were struggling with some of the top-ups on welfare, it also did help those that were the higher earners. And that's why we've seen property prices rise through the recession, because there was a bit more money washing around. Now, some people have done it tough, of course, some small business owners, those in hospitality and travel and retail, many have done it tough, but many others have done very well. And overall, notwithstanding the debt that we find ourselves in nationally, the stimulus has done its job and optimism is up, sentiment is strong, and often that's a good precursor to economic results down the track.
Well, who would have believed in the middle of last year that we'd be in the position we are today? That's fantastic. Now, a moment ago, you gave us a bit of an insight into how incomes and wealth is spread amongst the different demographic groups. But how does it play out around the different states in Australia? I would assume in our big capital cities, Melbourne and Sydney, incomes are higher, and in general, wealth would probably be a bit higher too.
That's exactly right, Michael. And the other one that you know, I'm sure we know always does pretty well is the ACT. All those public servants are on above average earnings. And from both an income and a wealth perspective, they do pretty well, which is why we always see those Canberra property prices are bumping up as well. There's a fair bit of money going around there. Generally, you're right, it's the eastern states that do well. WA has its ups and its downs. There are times when the average earnings in the west is above the national average, and it's been that way through the mining boom, but that's been slowing and earnings have been declining a little bit there of late. And from a wealth perspective, it follows that same trajectory. Again, you know, wealth is really the accumulation of those annual incomes. And so New South Wales really does dominate the national wealth. It's above the average by household. And Victoria does very strongly there as well. Queensland has been really moving ahead. And we often see this strong connection between demographic growth and economic growth. And while Queensland has been a bit cyclical over the years, the growth has been very strong with population, a lot of southerners heading north, and that's been exacerbated through or since COVID. And we're seeing the incomes and the wealth in Queensland move up as well. So, you know, we are different states in terms of wealth and income and economics and what's happening. And we see some of those factors flow through when we look at the national data.
One of the changes that's happened since COVID is, of course, our international borders are closed down. And there's concern about population growth with the new migrants coming. On the other hand, I've heard that a lot of expats are coming back, taking the place of those people. What are your insights into what's going to happen to our population, how that's going to affect our property markets, our economy, and businesses?
Great question. And we have been reliant on that overseas migration for our population growth. 2/3 of our population growth per annum over the last decade has been through net overseas migration. You know, the natural increase, the births minus the deaths, is only 1/3 of growth. It's actually quite small in that scheme. Suddenly, as you said, closed borders. And for the first time in our history, last year, we lost more people than we gained from an international perspective. We went backwards 72,000 people, and we'll do that again this year, all because of COVID and the lockdowns. And it's going to take a little while for that to come back. In fact, our forecasts are showing that we're not going to be back to where we were, which is about net gain from overseas of 380,000 people per annum. We're not going to get back to that until the end of this decade, late 2020s, perhaps 2030. So that's how it's going to play out. It'll mean that Our mid-century forecast, so our forecast to 2050, our national population, was due to hit 42 million people, up from the 25 million today. It looks like it'll now hit 40 million in the middle of the century, so we might have a net loss of about 2 million from otherwise what we would have had. But all of that to say, that's just change, if you like. That's a rounding error because, you know, we actually were our growth was a bit too red hot. We were struggling to keep up from an infrastructure, a housing, a construction and you know, meeting that domestic demand perspective. Congestion and wait lists and travel times were up. We were perhaps running too red hot with our population growth. The fact that we get a few years of a breather is pretty good, I think, and it'll help us reassess what is the right growth trajectory for Australia. It doesn't look like it's impacted property prices yet. I think there'll be a little bit of adjustment over time in certain markets, like, you know, the overseas student accommodation market. But overall, I think it's a net benefit for Australia. It lets us plan out a bit more and we can work out what is a sustainable growth rate moving forward and perhaps readjust that from the overgrowth that we've been seeing over the last decade.
Well, there you have it. We now understand a bit more about the distribution of wealth. And maybe just to finish off, Mark, it is worth remembering that we are a wealthy nation. We're in a prime position. People are wanting to come to our country. And once the borders are open again, they're going to want to come back here and live here. Why wouldn't they, Mark?
Oh, exactly. You've said it, Michael. I mean, we are the lucky country. I mean, you know, whatever it is, whether we're talking wars, whether we're talking GFC, you know, global recessions, or in this case, a pandemic, Australia comes out shining. It's incredible. And it's not just luck, can I say? I mean, we had great leadership. Australians in our research on how we got through COVID show that it was not just the leadership and the direction, but our population responding with great restraint, with civil respect. We weren't out there pushing back on the restrictions. We actually were locking ourselves down before the legislation came into place. We do tend to play it safe from a health perspective. We care for each other. We do look out for the underdog, and we've seen a lot of giving and caring and volunteering in this time. And I think all of that, that national, you know, community attitude does help us shine brightly. The international brand of Australia has done very well. We're seen as a safe, healthy and compliant nation. And I think that's going to be good for our future as well. So where else would we want to be but down under in this lucky country where the incomes are growing, the wealth is growing and the health has been well maintained?
Gee, after that, I think we deserve a pat on the back, Mark. We did a great job. So thank you so much for your time. Thanks for those insights. And I look forward to catching up with you again in the future on the Michael Yardney podcast. And I know that you're going to also be sharing some of your blogs on Property Update. And there'll be a link in the show notes to McCrindle, your organization, because you've got some great infographics, some great research, and I've listened to and been partaking in some of your webinars over the years. You give a lot of great information, so I very much appreciate it. Thanks, Mark.
Oh, you're most welcome. Thanks so much, Michael.
In a moment, I'm going to share my mindset message with you. But just harking back to what I was speaking with Mark McCrindle about, there is a wealth gap in Australia. The rich are getting richer, but that doesn't mean you can't do something about it. I remember reading, I think it was Bill Gates said, it's not your fault if you were born poor, but it's your fault if you die poor. So with a new economic cycle upon us, with a new property cycle upon us, it's time for you to secure your financial future. And I believe the best way to do that is through strategic property investment. And at Metropole, my team offer strategic property and wealth advice. By the way, we don't sell property and we have a holistic approach. So in this changing market, where not everyone's going to do well, I believe you need more than just a property strategist, more than just a buyer's agent. And if you go to metropole.com.au, you'll find out my team give a holistic approach to help you grow, protect and pass on your wealth. It all starts by creating a customized solution for you, for your specific needs, and then we will help you implement that solution. So go to metropole.com.au. You may want to use our strategic property advice, buyer's agency, whether you're buying a home or an investment. We'll help with finance, with financial planning, with wealth advisory, property management, renovations, development. There's a whole range of services. You may want to use some. You may want to use a few of them. I look forward to being part of your wealth creation journey.
Now here's Michael's mindset message. Remember, a change in your thinking will lead to a change in your life.
In today's mindset moment, I'd like to read to you an article written many, many decades ago by Jim Rohn. But some things just don't change. And his discussion was about facing the enemies within us. He was really talking about facing our fears. And today the world seems to be bringing on challenges, worries, fears from all directions, doesn't it? But Jim Rohn has got a great lesson for us because he tells us we're not born with courage, but neither are we born with fear. He says maybe some of our fears are brought on by our experiences, by what somebody's told us about what we've read or heard. Some of our fears are valid, like walking alone in a bad part of town at 2 a.m. But once you learn to avoid that situation, you don't need to live in fear, do you? Says Jim Rohn. Fear, even the most basic ones, can totally destroy your ambitions. Fear can destroy your fortunes. Fear can destroy your relationships. Fear, if unchecked, can destroy our lives, said Jim Rohn. Fear is one of the many enemies lurking inside us. Let me tell you about 5 of the other enemies we face from within, said Jim Rohn. The first enemy that you've got to destroy, before it destroys you, is indifference, taught Jim Rohn. What a tragic disease this is. Ho-hum, I'll let it slide, I'll just drift along. Here's one problem with drifting. You can't drift your way to the top of the mountain. Now, the second enemy we face within, according to Jim Rohn, is the enemy of indecision. Indecision is the thief of opportunity, of enterprise, said Jim Rohn. It'll steal your chances for a better future. Take a sword to this enemy, said Jim Rohn. The third enemy inside us is doubt. Sure, there's room for healthy skepticism. You can't believe everything nowadays, can you? But also, you can't let doubt take over. Many people doubt the past, they doubt the future, they doubt each other, they doubt the government, they doubt the possibilities, they doubt the opportunities. Worst of all, they doubt themselves. Jim Rohn said, doubt will destroy your life and your chance to success. It'll empty both your bank account and your heart. He said, doubt's an enemy, go after it, get rid of it. The fourth enemy Jim Rohn warns us about is the enemy of worry. We've all got to worry sometimes. Just don't let it conquer you. Instead, just let it alarm you, said Jim Rohn. Worry can be useful. If you step off the curb in New York City and the taxi's coming, you've got something to worry about, said Jim Rohn. But you can't let worry loose like a mad dog that drives you into a small corner. Here's what you've got to do with your worries. You drive them into a small corner, said Jim Rohn. Whatever's out there to get you, you've got to get it. Whatever's pushing on you, you've got to push back. And the fifth enemy Jim Rohn wanted to warn us about is the enemy of over-caution. It's the timid approach to life, because timidity is not a virtue. It's an illness. If you let it go, it'll conquer you, according to Jim Rohn. Timid people don't get promoted. They don't advance and grow. They don't become powerful. You've got to avoid over-caution. Do battle with the enemy. Do battle with your fears. So Jim Rohn teaches us to build your courage, to fight what's holding you back, what's keeping you from your goals and your dreams. He says be courageous in your life and in your pursuits of things, in pursuit of the things you want and the becoming the person you want to become. Some great words of wisdom from one of my mentors, Jim Rohn. Well, I hope you got some benefit from today's show. And if you did, why not pass the message on? Help others find out about the Michael Yardney podcast as well. Of course, if you don't already subscribe to the podcast, do that too, so you can keep up to date with all the great shows we are going to bring you in 2021. But in the meantime, why not click the share button and tell somebody else about the show as well? And if you want to tell the world by leaving a review and I read it out, then I'd love to say thank you by gifting you a book, as I'm going to do for 30 Years Too Late, who left a review on Apple Podcasts, and you're based in New Zealand. But if you email me, michael@metropole.com.au, I'd love to say thank you to you by gifting you one of my books. And you left a 5-star review, and I'm really proud that all the reviews seem to be 5-star, which are great. And you said, thanks, Michael and guests, for all the great sage advice and the pearls of wisdom given throughout your podcasts, and in particular your mindset messages. I wish I'd learned these lessons and advice 30 years ago. Keep up the great work, and thanks again. Well, thank you for leaving that message. And yes, it is interesting that the most common messages I get are about the mindset sessions, so of course they're going to keep coming. And if you want to catch up with me in between these twice-weekly shows, just go to any of the social media platforms and look for Michael Yardney, or become part of our community, the Property Update Facebook private group. Go to Facebook and look for Property Update, and I'd love to be part of your wealth creation journey. In the meantime, have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney Podcast, which was brought to you by Metropole, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney Podcast. Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropole to help you?